Welcome back to the Tone Deaf Hippies, guys. I'm Salema Wagner. Unfortunately, my co-host Vince Montenegro couldn't make it tonight. But since it's our anniversary of our 1 year, well, our 1 year anniversary of our podcast, we have a special friend of ours filling in for him.
Hey guys, this is Angie. Here enjoying my night with Salema, trying to spend some good time with her and share some good fun facts about some great music that she came up with.
Well, I didn't come up with the music, but I came up with the episode's theme, I guess. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to Woo-hoo. Everyone out there.
Hope you guys are wearing green. If not, I'm gonna come pinch you guys.
Pinch. So this is actually also, it's our, like, we're celebrating a lot of things this month. We're celebrating St. Patrick's Day, we're celebrating Women's Month, and we're also celebrating the 1 year anniversary of when we went into quarantine for 2 weeks for coronavirus.
So they say.
Right? We made it. Through the toilet paper shortages and the long lines and the
Lysol
and hand sanitizer shortages. It was like toilet gate and Lysol
gate.
Did we
really though? I mean, some people are still acting.
I don't know. Up. Yeah, people are still acting crazy right now. So get your shit together, guys.
And if you guys are going to be celebrating St. Patty's with some green beer or something like that, make sure you stay safe. Take an Uber if somewhere you go.
Yes. And safe also, like, wear your mask.
Right.
You know.
And 6 feet apart.
And 6 feet apart.
Cheers, guys.
Yes, exactly. So for this episode, I think it's awesome that it's going to be two girls talking about girl power, because I figured we would talk about the Riot Girl movement from the 90s, you know, to go with Women's Month and everything, you know, girl power and whatnot, and to show that us girls can also rock and roll just as...
And make a difference, but not just in music. Not just in music. Because it was like a feminist movement.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they had to make their voices heard, whatever it is that they were going through.
Yeah.
Especially, like, these bands were created, like, in college. So it was young women trying to get their voices heard in a world of men, you know, especially, like you said, in music. So that's actually pretty great.
Yeah. No, I agree. Completely agree. I mean, if you get technical, I think it even started, this was like, even in just a little spark, started back in the 70s with the Runaways, with Joan Jett, you know, getting this band all together, and she wanted to prove, because this is the 70s, this is the start of punk, you know, and she wanted to prove that girls can, you know, rock just like boys, and
she definitely paved the way for a lot of other bands to come into the scene.
Definitely.
And get recognition as a, like, a feminist lead artist rather than just kind of being in the background, which is what we were used to.
Which is funny, because when she started the band, she was really shy. That's why when she started the Runaways, she wasn't the lead singer. She kind of took, like, a background role. She was lead guitar, but she didn't sing.
It was, and she totally still rocks out, right?
Yeah, it was Sherry Curry that was in the front. But, you know, I think it was awesome what they came up with. It was the first all-female punk rock band formed by Joan Jett in 1975 in Los Angeles. It consisted of Joan Jett, Sandy West, Lita Ford, Sherry Curry, and Jackie Fox, and they were all 14 and 15 years old. So these were really, really young girls, and they all kind of had, like, a persona that they would mimic or that they would admire and kind of dress themselves after and, you know, kind of mold themselves after. So, like, Curry was obsessed with David Bowie. And, like, Jet was obsessed with Susie Quattro. Ford was obsessed with Jeff Beck. And Fox with Gene Simmons.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, aren't you a little obsessed with Gene Simmons, too?
not Gene Simmons. That's more Bella. But I am obsessed with Kiss as a whole.
I see.
But I'm a star child. So, she's the demon. So,
But, you know, talking about paving the way for, you know, other women in punk and rock, you could also talk about the Raincoats, which is actually a British band, experimental post-punk band that was formed by Anna Da Silva and Gina Birch back in 1977. And just like how we were talking about the whole feminist movement and the Riot Girl movement, you know, they were very different, bringing in this, like, new sound that nobody was really used to, because everybody was looking for that male sound, male voice, and they just sort of kind of went in there, gave it their all, and, you know, they weren't liked by many, but slowly but surely, you know, three albums later, you know, Kurt Cobain actually spoke to, I believe it was Anna Da Silva, in regards to his admiration for them in their earlier years.
He was a huge feminist.
Well, I mean, who doesn't love Kurt, you know? But, yeah.
I totally agree with that. And I do see the differences between, you know, let's put the Runaways and the Raincoats in one category, and then, you know, when we go into the Riot Girls, that's more 90s. I think it was a difference, too, because when the Riot Girls, they're a little older. Like you said, they were college girls already. Right. So they're a little bit more mature. They actually had, like, a voice and ideas and feminist thoughts that they wanted to get out there and promote, as opposed to, like, the Runaways and the Raincoats. I think that was the very, very beginning of it. They were so young, they were 15 and everything, so they didn't really have, like, they weren't speaking out for, you know, abortion rights or women's rights or this and that.
Creating music,
Breaking down, like, barriers, I guess, because before then it was just all male-dominated, you know, punk scene. But also, I think it was like how you said, they paved the way for the Riot Girls later to come in. So even they have always said, and, you know, a greatest inspiration was the Runaways, Joan Jett, this and that. You know, like, they look up to them.
Right.
So even though they were young and they still didn't have the ideas, I think it was the start of the revolution. Just like the spark, maybe.
I think it was what music needed at that time. It was like something new, something fresh, so it was loved. And till this day, you know, you still hear songs by the Runaway on the radio. You know, my daughter loves Joan Jett and playing the guitar to whatever she wants to. she plays whatever she wants to, you know, and just kind of like the Runaways did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I remember I had watched a documentary on Joan Jett, and she said that she got her first guitar when she was 13 years old. She asked for it as a Christmas present. Her parents got it for her, and she's like, okay, I'm going to go and take some lessons, when she went to the guitar studio teacher, you know. He was like, girls don't play electric guitar. Like, so he gave her an acoustic to try it out on, and then she wanted to learn Smoke on the Water, I think, and he was trying to teach her, like, some folksy song about, like, I can't even remember.
Something on the acoustic.
Yeah, it was more like, you know, like, very, I don't know, of Joni Mitchell kind of vibes, you know? Like, okay. It's just like, no, girls can not want to be Joni Mitchell. They can want to rock, too, you know? Like, so it's just like, I'm out. And she taught herself.
Oh, that's
And she
awesome.
Taught herself. She was like... And like I said, she wasn't... It was her band, really. And she's the one that came up with the idea and all that. But she wasn't the front person because she was still a little shy. So... you know, they put Curry in front. They didn't last long. They weren't a band for too long, but I think it was because, like I said, they were so young. So then when they were, like, touring in Japan and this and that at 15, and they were hardly making any money because I think their, like, manager was also chipping them on money, too. And then they were getting, like, beer bottles thrown at them by guys, like, guys threatening them, like, oh, you're, you know, a lesbian, and...
Just all that negativity,
you know,
right?
And they're like, why? We don't have to be a lesbian just because we want to rock and roll, like, seriously.
Right, that was another thing that I noticed in that, like, genre,
that they all said that, huh?
Yes, mm-hmm. That they were always being attacked about their sexuality,
lesbian,
nothing to do with the music
at
itself.
All.
And it's like, okay, well, then the music must be pretty good in order for you just to talk about their sexuality, you know?
And I don't think one has anything to do with the other. Like, I really don't. Like, you could be a lesbian and be super girly, and you could be straight and be super butchy, you know, and super tomboyish, you know. I wear music t-shirts and jeans and sneakers every day. I don't wear dresses and stuff, and I'm still kind of girly, so I think it's just, I don't know. I don't agree with that, but, you know.
But, you know, just like the Runaways, the Raincoats are actually still around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, on October of 2017, Jen Pelly wrote a book called The Raincoats.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is basically about the band's first album. And so if you guys are into reading, check that out, you know. Jen Pelly, it's called The Raincoats. I mean, a lot of people don't read anymore once you have this, like...
So, everyone out there who is not illiterate and you want to check out this book, for those who are illiterate, I'm sure there's an audiobook version out there.
Yeah, look for it, guys.
So anyway, let's get into the Girl Riot movement.
Yes, so that's...
Okay.
Pushing from the 70s, we're going into the early 90s, right?
Actually, like, late 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, like, 88, 89, kind of, you know. So, there's this thing called fanzines, and what it is, it started in the 1970s in Europe. It was invented in London to promote punk and propaganda against the establishment. So it was like homemade magazines that, like, the punk kids were doing, you know, and they would,
like, little pamphlets.
Yeah. Okay, so when I say they, is Kathleen Hanna and Toby Vail, which is from they're girls that started a band called Bikini Kill, but just remember that, but I'll go into that a little bit later. They started their own fanzine magazine, you know, and I think they named it Girl Riot. And they did it because they had a friend who's also a roommate who got raped and also, like, assaulted, and her face was, like, destroyed, all bruised and everything, when she finally got home and got away from the guy. And so it really affected them all and everything. They're like, we gotta stick up for this. Like, we can't just stay quiet. We have all had some sort of rape or, you know, like, sexual assault against us. You know, why aren't we talking about it?
So they wanted to use that platform of, like, the fanzines that you're talking about.
Exactly.
To bring that to light and to just not hide behind it anymore.
Exactly.
Okay.
They were also doing, like, spoken word. And, to get, you know, their frustrations out and what they wanted to say and have a voice. But, you know, not a lot of people go to spoken word.
And what do you mean by spoken word? Is that kind of like open mic night or like a poet
meeting type of thing? Yeah, yeah. This is in Seattle in the 90s, by the way. So there's like, in Seattle in the 90s, there's a lot of, you know, this is the start, the birthplace of grunge, you know. And it's, and grunge, I've always felt it's kind of like a form of sung poetry or whatever, you know. So where do you go before then, you know, spoken word? So they would do it at coffee houses.
Oh, okay.
They would do it at people's houses that they were having for the, like, party, university parties, etc., you know. They all kind of knew each other. It, actually, Kathleen Hanna was friends with Kurt Cobain before they were ever in any kind of, like, band or anything, both of them. And you know how, like, I know I'm getting all over the place, but you know how the most famous song from Nirvana is, like, Teen Spirit?
Yes.
It smells like Teen Spirit. Well, you know how there's a deodorant named Teen Spirit, you know? So Kathleen Hanna was, like, hanging out with Kurt Cobain when they were, like, super drunk and everything, and she, like, got spray paint and spray painted on his walls, like, Kurt Cobain smells like Teen Spirit, you know, like the deodorant.
Like the deodorant.
And he named his song after that, you know?
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Little known fact.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah, it is a fun fact. But it also goes to show you that something that was technically invented by a woman, because she came up with the whole little, like, Teen Spirit.
The name.
Yeah, the name and everything. Who gets the credit? Oh, the song of our generation for the 90s smells like Teen Spirit. Kurt Cobain. Like, but he was such a big feminist, you know, so he was always giving her credit for it and talking about
credit
it
where
and
it
stuff.
Was due.
But, getting back to the Bikini Kill, Kathleen Hanna and Toby Vail, and like I said, they all kind of knew each other. Like all the people you'll even see in other bands, they're all gonna have, like, cross reference interactions.
Okay.
Someone dated someone from some,
or they
band
were in,
or
like,
things.
A band before.
Yeah,
they were the same,
something like that. Like, they're all from the same area. They're in, you know, Washington, either Olympia or Aberdeen.
Okay.
You know, so they were going to college there. And, you know, your first year of college, you feel like you're no longer a kid. You're an adult. So you're going to stick up for everything and stand
and
for
independent.
Everything. And be, you know. So they wanted to be heard. They wanted to make a noise, you know. And just, like, they didn't really, like I said, they didn't know how to even play any instruments. And they're like, how are we going to start a band if we don't know how to play any instruments? So they just learned, you know, really fast, and they weren't good at it. But when they would have their shows, and this is very, like, garage punk and underground punk and everything, when they would have their shows, a lot of guys would say, oh, they don't even know how to sing, they don't even know how to play their instruments. And they're like, you don't get it. We're not trying to become famous off of this. We're not trying to be this, like, mainstream band that makes it and stuff. We're just trying to have a voice in college. It was like they didn't think it was going anywhere or anything.
Right.
It was just like a little college band you're in, you know, that you get together with your friends and you guys just
But even without them knowing it, they were actually moving, like, what do they say, rustling feathers, like, you know.
Yeah, they were, but they didn't want to become mainstream.
Right. And
know,
that's why their sound is very, like, rustic in
raw.
The sense that, yeah, very raw. Like, you're like, oh, I like this beat, but where is it going? Like, there's really no direction with it.
And then their voices, they weren't, like, cultivated voices. It's not like they had, you know, music
training
lessons.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're just like some 18-year-olds, like, wah, you know, screaming into the mic. I get it. And like, imagine, see, if you guys, if all of you guys can hear my voice, it sounds horrible still. So I get it. It was just like when you get that horrible raspiness too after days of doing shows or whatever, kind of like something like that. And they didn't care. They didn't care. They're like raspy, losing their voice, not on tone, you know, like they didn't care. They just wanted to get their message across. And then, you know how like in punk they do the mosh pits and everything, you know? They would always make all the girls go to the front. They would tell everyone at the beginning of the show, like, let all the girls go in the front. Not because we're trying to separate you guys or try to say that women are better than men. We just want to be equal to men. They're like, but the thing is that they were getting hurt, a lot of the girls. Because, you know, in a mosh pit, how it gets, you know?
Right.
So, and then these girls would try to join in on the mosh pit and, like, they would get, like, a boot to the neck, you know?
Just get stomped
and broken ribs and everything. Yeah, it was bad. So they started that whole thing like, okay, before the show starts, all the girls to the front. And they would move all the girls to the front. And then...
kind of like a call.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then another thing, too, because they wanted everyone to support feminism. Like, at their shows, they would charge girls $3 and they would charge boys $4. But if they came in a dress, they would get charged $3.
Oh.
So that they could, like, support. You know, they would do little funny stunts like that and things like that to get just, you know, get attention and, you know, be a radical. They would put on fashion shows with, like, just fabric they would cut out or whatever and just, like, write, I don't know, like, you know, like when you would see a dress like that, like, meat is murder or something, you know, right. Like... she was raped or something, you know, like very just outspoken stuff, very avant-garde. And
well, yeah, just like how you were saying in Washington, right, in Olympia, which was kind of the birthplace of this movement, there's Slater Kinney, which is another, you know, all women band, mm-hmm. that was actually formed in 94 by Corin Tucker and Carrie Brownstein, that also helped out with that, getting their voices heard, you know. Even though the music, the lyrics, did revolve around a lot of different topics, not just necessarily, you know, a women's movement, rather, but that whole getting their voices heard, getting their points across, you know, very... leftist is what we're calling mm-hmm. them now, mm-hmm. you know, but back then it was just, I'm done with it, like, just hear what I have to say, you know, exactly. And that's basically what these groups kind of brought out.
And if you don't like it, you don't have to hear it.
Right, yeah. We're you here know, for just, us, yeah. And you don't have to be here. Mm-hmm. So, that's why it was kind of like a love-hate relationship with these bands and these groups, because it was like, well, do I like them? Do I not? What do they really stand for? And some were appreciated, you know, more than others. Mm-hmm. And some were just kind of forgotten, you yeah. know. Mm-hmm. And went in their own different ways, different projects. Maybe not music, but maybe in the written word. Or, you know, how you were talking about, like, these fashion shows. You mm-hmm. know, they took it to another level.
We're very artistic
level.
Girls.
Yeah, definitely.
Very artistic girls.
Definitely. And, of course, using that platform just to get... you know, the whole rape thing that you were talking about with Bikini Kill, you know, restarting of the fanzines, which something that had been lost, but mm-hmm. had proven to be very effective in what it was created for.
Yeah.
You know, so that was great on their part to bring that back.
I also like that, like for example, at Bikini Kill, they would dress in really, really, like, girly stuff, sometimes even in just bikini bottoms and a t-shirt and go out, like,
I'm with
out
that.
On stage. Yeah. And just, like, write slut all over their, like, bodies and stuff, because they're like, we don't have to give power to that word. That was, you know, a misogynistic word that
oh,
was
yes.
made to put us down, you know. Like,
also with the whole lesbian thing and,
yeah, like, either you're a slut, you're a lesbian, you're promiscuous,
yeah.
You're prude, you're a bitch, like, we're always something, always, right. You know, but a guy doesn't, and it's like, that's the standard, you know, like, that's what we should aspire to be, guys.
Yeah.
So, no, yeah, exactly, no. So then when they took back that power from those words, like, you can't call me a slut and a bitch if you want. I'll call myself that. Like, I don't care. They're just words. They're not going to do anything to me. You're not going to put me down or judge me. So, my turn?
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Bratmobile. And like I said, all these bands kind of connect. They were all kind of from the same area, so everyone kind of knew. They ran in the same circles, I should say, you know. They were, and they were running with guy circles, too, you know, that were part of the movement, too. Because we don't also want to just bash guys out there, okay? Not all guys are misogynistic pigs. There are some, you know, like, feminist guys that are, you know, pro-feminism, so all power to that. But yeah, they were hanging out with Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic, thank you. I for some reason I was gonna say
Hemsworth, you know, Thor.
I wish.
Just
no,
kidding.
I was gonna say something else. But they were very, like, I don't want to say girly guys. That's not the right word. What would a word be like that? Like that they're very, I don't know what to say. Like, they're not girly. Like, they themselves were not girly. But that they were for girl rights, I should say, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, and then there was also, they would hang out with, like, Mudhoney, who is also from Washington, from the grunge scene, and they were very pro on that, too.
Well, talking about, like, men that are pro-feminist, mm-hmm. Feminism and stuff, you know, Courtney Love, right? Some of us remember her as the lead singer from Hole.
Mm-hmm.
Others remember mm-hmm. her from that dirty wife of Kurt Cobain, kind of like how I remember her. But she's still freaking awesome, you know?
She is talented. I'll give her that.
She is very talented.
She has a great voice.
I don't know about a great voice, but it's soothing at mm-hmm. times. And also when she wants to give you that, like, delivery of what she's trying to tell you, it's, like, very just out there. Like,
direct.
You could appreciate her voice.
Mm-hmm.
It talks to you. And she's also a musician, you know.
And an also very outspoken, direct woman.
Right.
So.
Which is very rare. But, go ahead.
But there is a fun fact about this, actually. There is only one thing that sometimes, although we want to say girl power and this and that, some girls hate on other girls sometimes. They don't empower each other, you know. And so, in the 90s at Lollapalooza, backstage, Bikini Kill was there because, I don't know if the entire group was there or just Kathleen Hanna, because she was actually dating at Ad Rock from Beastie Boys at the time.
Ooh.
Now they're married, but she was dating him at the time. Also, she was friends with Kurt Cobain, like I said. She was standing, like, to the side of the stage, you know, so where you could see the band, but you're not on stage, obviously.
Okay, kind of just on the side.
And she was watching the Beastie Boys, and Courtney Love just walks up to her and punches her in the face.
What?
Yes, just punches her in the face and just walks off.
And I need contact.
That's the thing that, like, then after that, they were spreading all these things, all these, like, tabloids, like, she did it because she thought that she was having an affair with Kurt,
oh,
you know,
no.
And you know, just it. So it was sad because it was like girl power. We're all for each other. All this love. And then here she comes and like, you know, like
just bashes another woman,
punches her in the face at an event. Like what?
So did that boost her publicity?
Actually, after that, they went into this thing where it was called like, because this lady that was the reporter that had been there bashed them about the girl hate. Yeah.
Okay.
The girl hate and everything. And then Kathleen felt really sad. She's like, that a woman reporter would trash talk her too. You know, like even less girls
instead of making it less of an issue. Yeah.
So they went into this thing that they were calling it the media blackout. So none of the bands were doing any press. They were like, this is our thing. We're doing garage punk rock. We want to get our message out. We don't play the instruments very well. We don't have the best voices. We don't give a fuck.
Take it.
Yeah, you don't like it, you know, get. But we are not going to give out press releases anymore or interviews or anything because we don't like how you guys are projecting us out there, you know, like
it's always like that, you know, the media always turns one action, one word, or you know, one outfit into a whole different thing.
Oh yeah.
Just taken out of context, and that definitely doesn't help the artist, you know, if anything it hurts their persona.
And then they had a cause. So it was even something bigger than just the artist and the band. They didn't even care about the artist and the band. They cared about the cause.
Yeah.
The movement, you know. It was like they even consider it as part of the waves of feminism. Like, you know, the first one was when women were trying to get voting rights. Right. You know, in the 1800s. And then the second wave was in the 60s when it was you know, African-American rights and LGBTQ rights and women rights and all that stuff. And then, again, in the 90s, you know, like...
this third wave.
Yeah, the third discussing. Wave. I think now, though, we're in our fourth wave, because...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could...
We
you
still
could
have not the, fixed the problems.
No, but the good thing is that the youth is a little bit more... I don't even want to say this, but woke, in the sense that they are educating themselves on issues, you know, where music has always been a part of it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we've been discussing this whole time about these bands and these groups, and now in this so-called fourth wave, you know, we are looking for music that in years from now that we're going to look back and say, hey, you guys remember this group, you guys remember this, you know, artist, and that's going to be correlating into that whole movement that's happening now
too. I hope so. So I think we still have a long way to go, and I think they did do it a lot better in the 90s. You know, the Generation X people were a lot better than us millennials, because they, I don't know, I felt like they were actually trying to make a difference or something. We're too worried with social media. And like,
yeah, millennials, we just kind of sit back and like,
I'll get fixed, you know. So maybe now it's our kids' turns to fix our mistakes.
But it's really up to us to educate them too.
Yeah.
You know, just how we're trying to do right now, you know, bringing up the past and the differences that they made and the impact that they had. And, you know, we're still trying to walk in those footsteps.
Yes. Is it my turn now for a band or your?
No, Bratmobile. We started talking about Cornelia.
Oh, that's right. Distracted. Okay. So, Bratmobile. Allison Wolf and Molly Newman from the University of Oregon formed a Francie's named Girl Germs in 1991. And at first, they were an a cappella style band because they didn't know how to play any instruments.
But I'm sure they were amazing because I love a cappella.
I did too, actually. I mean, I'm not even gonna lie. I enjoy
Pitch Perfect. I don't know about you.
Yes. So, no, but it's true. But I love how they're like, nothing's going to stop us. We're going to be a band. Right. You know, like, instruments? Who cares?
Yeah, we're a cappella. Let me get this tomato
paste. Exactly. And then another really cool thing is that they were really the only two true members of that band, and they would switch off on, like, when they finally learned how to play the drums and the guitar, they would switch off, take turns, and then they just had to hire, like, a bassist.
Were they also self-taught as far as,
yeah,
like, learning?
Yeah, all these girls are self-taught. All of these girls are, they're not suburban girls, they're not, like, rich girls or anything. Some came from broken homes and stuff, and they just taught themselves. I mean, I'm sure they were hanging out with, like, the boys from, like, the grunge. Like, from grunge.
That makes them
stuff,
even more,
you know?
Amazing, you know?
I know. And it's funny because I remember when I was in high school, I wanted to start a band so bad. That's when I got, like, really into my guitars and stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, we're gonna just, like, get together and play in the garage and this and that. Never happened, obviously.
So you were a one-man show?
Yeah, pretty much.
Who was supposed to join?
No, I had people. No, we had two members, and my friend Sandra, who went out and bought a bass. I saved up money, bought my guitar. And then our friend Edith, I don't know if she ever did buy the drum set, but she was a drummer. And so, but yeah, we would talk about it and stuff. But I know. We talked about it, but we never actually did it. But I mean, like, that's why I always tell Bella, like, you have the music room. Start a band with Kaylee and everyone, you know? So.
Well, yeah, I mean, they both can sing.
Now it's our turn for our girls.
Yeah, Bella would be on drums. Kaylee would be on lead guitar. And bass.
Yes. We could get Caitlin thrown in there, too.
Yes, on keyboard. Same. That would be amazing.
I know. on keyboard, that's more Sophie. Like,
true.
All right. So, anyway, they didn't last long, though. They were just together from, like, 91 to 94. They did reunite in 1999 to go on tour. And here is my fun fact. They reunited in 1999 to go on tour with Sleater-Kinney and the Donnas, among other Girl Riot bands.
Oh, check them.
See, I'm telling you, they all kind of knew each other.
Yeah, I mean, when you said that, I was like, I'm pretty sure they probably had a couple of gigs together or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I just have one last band to talk about. Are you done? Yours?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Then the last band I have is the Donnas. And that's so funny that I'm talking about the Donnas now when I was just telling you about my girl band, is because I had discovered the Donnas at age 15 by my then boss. You know, I was already working, and he told me about the Donnas and the Ramones, and I was like, oh, I want to do this. But I got really into them around 15, 16 years old, like, really into them. And they're from Palo Alto, California. They started in 93, and get this, they were all friends since they were, like, in grade school.
Oh.
So they formed their band in 8th grade.
Wow.
In 8th grade, yeah. And the members are Brett Anderson, Allison Robertson, Amy Cesari, and Tori Castellano. And, have you seen the movie Drive Me Crazy?
I have not.
You have it with Adrian from Entourage. What's his name? Adrian Greer.
The guy from
Entourage.
The Devil Wears Prada.
He's in that too?
Curly hair, yep. Gorgeous eyes, kind of cat.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, he's in that movie with Melissa Joan Hart. It's called Drive Me Crazy.
Is this like an old movie?
Well, from the 90s. It's vintage.
Well, excuse me, I didn't come into this country until 92, so I wouldn't know.
Well, I think it was in 99.
Okay.
I think. I was obsessed with that movie because the Donnas play in that movie throughout the whole movie. It's his favorite band, but they're called the Electrocutes in that movie.
Oh, okay.
The reason they're called the Electrocutes in that movie is because that's their original band name.
Oh.
They named themselves the Electrocutes, but then as they got older, their voice started changing a little bit, getting a little deeper because they're getting a little older.
Right.
Their sound, their interests, all that. So they wanted to go a little softer punk, you know? So they wanted to create a, like, more grown-up version of them. So then they named themselves the Donnas. And they consider it, like, a...
reincarnation.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they're like, look, we're going to be like the Ramones. All our names are going to be Donnas. And we'll just have... Donna A, Donna C,
oh, like their last
Donna
names,
R.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, so that's why in the movie they chose to be called the Electrocutes. Just, I don't know, to play on that.
And I'm sorry, what's the movie again? Because I
Drive
think
Me
I have
Crazy.
To watch it. Okay.
Yes, watch it. Check it out.
Definitely.
It's a cute little, like, girly romantic comedy from the 90s, you know, but.
I mean,
I like it because...
isn't it like Garden State, something like that?
Yeah,
too?
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I totally like that one.
You know, and it's cute, and but I like it more because it has really good music in the movie, and it's the Electrocutes or the Donnas. But yeah, they were obsessed with the Ramones, the Runaways, with AC/DC. Like I said, they were childhood friends, and they started their band in eighth grade, but they didn't really become known until after high school. That's why they changed their name to the Donnas after high school.
Well, that's probably also when they started refining like their sound.
Yeah.
Right? Like you were saying.
And actually, when they really, really first started, like when they were just talking about it, maybe on the playground, literally, they wanted to be called Raggedy Ann. And then the Electrocutes, and then the Donnas.
Well, I'm glad they didn't go with Raggedy
right?
Ann.
But they're a really, really good band. I like them. They remind me a lot of, literally, of the Ramones, just girl version.
That's pretty cool.
But.
Well, I mean, with all these great information that we've shared tonight, I really hope that, you know, your listeners start looking into these bands and, like, these movements that we talked about.
Yes, check these out.
Because that would be really cool. You know, I mean, we talk about the Runaways so much, Joan Jett, because they're amazing, but also these smaller groups, you know, Slater Kinney.
And it's a good way to discover new music, too. Like, you don't just have to always listen to what's on the radio and stuff. Like, check out different bands, different genres. Like, don't
Definitely.
Just get stuck into a box. Like, I don't have a specific genre that I like. It's whatever I'm in the mood for that day.
Yes, and I noticed that
I
about
do,
you.
Yeah.
And
I'm all over the place, like, all over the place.
And you appreciate each different type of music.
I do.
And that's great. And, I mean, I thank you for allowing me to doing this with
you. I thank
you
for
tonight.
Doing it with me. Thank you. Because
it's amazing. I mean, most of these bands, I was like, wait, what? And then how we started putting them together, piecing the puzzles.
Right? It's like a puzzle, yeah.
It was great. It's great. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. I loved having you, and we're going to have to do another one, too.
Definitely.
Maybe even with our girls, too.
Our
girls are best
so
friends.
Funny.
Our daughters are best friends, also along with our other friend, May. Shout out to May.
Hey, May. And the girls.
And the girls. And they're best friends too. But yeah, we should do like a tween special. Listen to what they're listening to, because they're all over the place too. Our daughters, like my daughter's into like Billie Eilish and Lizzo. Your daughter's into the Beatles and AC/DC. Yes, so they're all over the place like us too. But I love that because you go through phases, is what you're in the mood for. You discover different music.
Right.
All these different even music and different languages and different countries. Just everybody loves music. Everybody. I mean, it's been around forever.
It's a universal language.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our podcast. And Vince, happy anniversary on our 1 year of making this podcast come true. Thanks, buddy.
Woohoo!
And that's it. So, yeah.
Happy St. Patty's, guys.
Oh, yeah. Happy St. Patrick's.